Space, the final frontier. 5G is the first generation of wireless communications technology that will expand the reach of cellular networks through satellite connectivity. Use of satellites and other high-altitude platforms will make high-speed connectivity available in remote locations, augment service continuity for machine-to-machine and IoT devices, and bolster the reliability of mission-critical communications. But how do we get there from here? Let's talk about it. Non-terrestrial networks are the focus of this episode of All Things 5G. Greetings! My name is Dylan McGrath, and I'm here with my colleague, Jesse Cavazos. We are from Keysight's Cellular Industry Solutions marketing team, and we are the co-hosts of All Things 5G, the podcast that dives deep into the technology, business, and policy aspects of the fifth generation wireless communications technology.
Hello, everyone. Just a reminder before we get started to please visit our website at keysight.com/find/allthings5G. There you can browse previous episodes and access more content associated with this episode's topic, non-terrestrial networks.
And please note, we have recently added a subscription feature to our website. Subscribe to this podcast via our website and you will get an alert each time a new episode is posted. You'll also be eligible to receive cool All Things 5G swag and other subscriber-only content.
That's right. And of course, you can also subscribe to All Things 5G through podcast platforms like iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever service you use to get your podcasts.
But that's not going to get you cool All Things 5G swag. So why not do both? The website, again, is keysight.com/find/allthings5G. Visit the page and subscribe today.
Okay, let's move on to our topic for this episode now. Non-terrestrial networks, or NTNs.
That's a great idea. To set the stage, let's talk a little bit about what non-terrestrial networks are. Typically, when we talk about cellular networks, we're talking about terrestrial networks, infrastructure like cell towers that are based on the ground. And that's because so far, terrestrial networks are basically all that any of us have used.
But non-terrestrial networks involve infrastructure that is not based on Earth. This primarily means satellites. But NTNs may, in some cases, include other high-altitude platforms like balloons and drones. 5G is the first generation of cellular technology that will incorporate satellite links.
Yeah, so obviously there's a lot to say about non-terrestrial networks. We're going to be delving into some of the technical requirements and complexities of this issue with our experts in a moment. But first, from a user perspective, and I'm sure our technical experts will be happy to correct me about this, satellite links directly to our cell phones just seems simpler and less complex to me. We have all these communication satellites orbiting the Earth. Why not link directly to them with our cell phones? I know that's a lot easier said than done.
That's interesting. To me, it feels the other way around. I would have said, oh my, now you're looking at trying to leverage something that's so much further away from us. Mm-hmm. I thought, okay, now this is going to be bringing a lot greater challenges. And I think part of our discussions will delve into what does that mean by looking at something that is a lot further away than what we've used previously in network infrastructure.
Right. But you're just talking about the technical challenges. And yes, again, I'm not trying to belittle those. I'm just saying if we have the ability to set this infrastructure up there in the sky, kind of out of sight, out of mind, let's do it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Makes a lot more sense. Just like moving from wireline to wireless. You don't have to see it. It's more natural and you don't have it in the way and everything kind of works magically together. Of course, there's a lot of work that would go into making things so natural.
Right. And you just keep coming back to all the work, but
it's all the work for me.
Okay. Well, speaking of work, why don't we stop pontificating and bring in some experts?
Absolutely. Let's hear from the experts. First, we'll talk with Yanni Tolonen, product manager for Keysight's radio channel emulators. And then later, we will be joined by Dr. Pekka Kiosti, a senior specialist for radio channel emulators and an expert in radio channel characterization.
Okay, let's get to it.
The The road to open and virtualized networks is paved with challenges. Join us for the Open RAN Transformation event on October 27th to hear from industry and technical experts on the state of the market and challenges across the network lifecycle and gain insights on how to overcome them. Open RAN Transformation is a unique event designed for chief network officers, engineering executives, and their direct staff. It includes presentations from renowned consulting firms, DeLauro and Frost & Sullivan, demonstrations with industry leaders including Team Innovation Lab, Xilinx, and Itri, and an expert panel to answer your most pressing questions around product verification and system integration. Secure your spot today at www.keysight.com/find/oranevent. You will receive early access to DeLauro's white paper, The Market Upside with Open RAN, and the results of Frost & Sullivan survey with mobile network operators on ORAN perceptions, challenges, and deployment plans. We look forward to seeing you.
Hi, and we are back with Yanni Tolenin, a product manager for Keysight's PropSim radio channel emulators. Yanni, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, we've been talking a little bit about non-terrestrial networks, and we do have some idea of what they are, but we were hoping that we could start off by asking you to give us an overview from a 1,000-foot level. What are non-terrestrial networks?
All right, so when we are usually talking about the 5G new radio networks, kind of the evolution of the cellular networks, we are talking about terrestrial networks. That's due to the fact that they are located on the ground and on ground level, so to speak. And now when we are facing the non-terrestrial networks, that basically includes everything that expands our networks from the ground level to something higher, like the high altitude platform service on the balloons and things like that. But the main idea is to enhance the cellular networks to the satellite constellations so that we can have not only the ground stations or ground towers for the cellular networks, we also can have the access through the satellite constellation, the satellite network. So that's kind of the idea, so that we enhance the network from the ground to the satellites.
Right, but that's an interesting point too that I think is often overlooked, at least by myself. We are talking mainly about satellites, but there are other high altitude platforms that are involved as well, correct?
Yes, definitely. Maybe one of the most interesting ones is the drone type of base station. So if we think about the base stations, we usually think about those masts and towers. They are massive and they definitely would not move. But now with these non-terrestrial networks, suddenly we can have a base station flying as a drone, for example, in the urban areas, covering some areas in the dense city centers and some places where you really need to enhance the coverage. So, for example, if you have a major league baseball game and you have 30,000 viewers at some stadium, you could fly up some drones above the stadium and get the better service by flying the base stations where you really need them. So the high altitude platforms usually refer to some kind of balloons and drone type of base stations, and they are relatively low flying, let's say some hundreds of meters, usually opposed to the satellites, which run some hundreds of kilometers above ground.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it really could be more of a dynamic thing where let's deploy some drones. We have a baseball game going on or some kind of event where there's going to be a lot of people. We know that we're going to need to enhance our network or augment our network. And
yes.
You could use something like that. That's, yeah, very interesting.
That brings up the conversation to more of the use cases for NTN. The idea to make non-terrestrial networks available in places where terrestrial networks are not available, like in remote areas or when you're traveling across the seas or in planes, etc. Can you talk a little bit about the use cases for NTN?
Yeah, so that definitely brings us to the key point on why we would be introducing satellite networks and any other type of networks that are dynamically kind of able to be allocated. So the remote areas would be one, as well as kind of isolated platforms. If you think about, for example, accessing the internet from aircrafts, you are flying over the Atlantic Sea from US to European continent, you could access the internet, which would be kind of handled as a satellite link from the aircraft to somewhere, wherever your service provider really is. But those remote locations and isolated platforms is only kind of the peak of an iceberg. Then we have really possibility for enhancing the coverage and really bringing the network without need to build a huge infrastructure to every place. So if we, for example, look at the places in Canada and, for example, in the Alaska and places like that, the building of the infrastructure really is expensive, and then you need to reach also everybody. So whoever is your subscriber in the northern areas, like for example, I'm here in Finland, this is quite not so densely populated country, and we would really like to have the high-speed internet. So then that kind of also solves the coverage issue at the same time. And there are also new applications that are planned to be built on top of this new satellite access. So for example, the IoT, Internet of Things, and man-to-machine communications, where you don't really need so fast response times and so wide bandwidths, but you need to have the coverage absolutely everywhere. So with these kinds of enhancements, we really get the coverage for the full globe, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. That's some of the other benefits that comes with above wireless connectivity in remote places. There's also better reliability for machine-to-machine and IoT connectivity cases yes. as well with NTN.
Absolutely. So I think the coverage is the main thing in the whole effort of pushing for the non-terrestrial network. So we really get the network all and everywhere.
Okay. Can you walk us through a little bit the rollout of the non-terrestrial network elements in 3GPP standards? I understand this is supposed to be a major component of Release 17, but some elements, some foundational elements have already been deployed in Release 15 and Release 16. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So that kind of the planned launch of the networks and when people really get the service in the cellular phones and, for example, their all kind of IoT-related applications, that would come out from the Release 17, like you said. And that's kind of 2023, roughly, or by the end of 2023 when that should happen. But already now we've been able to kind of add things on Release 15 and 17 standardization. So for example, already now when we plan on the test platforms and technological development of the 5G NTN, the foundation is already there on the Release 15 and 16. So for example, now I'm really interested on figuring out against what kind of link conditions our customers really should test against when they are starting to plan on testing the 5G NTN service. And those channel models which define the link conditions from, for example, satellite to ground and satellite to satellite and multi-relay type of communication, that already has been established in the Release 16 document. So we already know that, okay, there will be a LEO 600, LEO 1200, and those numbers refer in kilometers, for example, the orbital height of the satellites, and the standard from the testing point of view already is quite mature. So that's kind of a very important thing when now the companies think about, okay, we need to launch a totally new service 2023, and they really need to start investing a lot of money in the technological development, integration of the satellite networks into their cellular networks, for example. But now Keysight already has possibility for going forward and really develop the test platforms, for example, against these channel model type of specifications already rolled out on the Release 16.
Okay, so people are already working on the development work. Even though Release 17 will be coming later on, they're already working on the testing because of they need to deploy the elements for non-terrestrial networks. That's what you're saying.
Yes. And especially if we look at the platform type of development, that are we really able to enhance the current network coverage and the current connectivity through the 5G new radio networks with the satellite? So that is the first thing that we see companies, the most advanced companies, have started to invest their efforts into. And we can see both the vendors of the handsets, the vendors of the mobile phones, but also I can see that the operators start to become really interested about the 5G NTN, so that when they are operating the networks, suddenly they would have to cooperate and work together with the satellite service providers, as well as the satellite service providers. We can see right now that there are these new massive LEO type of constellations that are being launched. We know, for example, the Amazon launching thousands of satellites at the same time, also SpaceX launching thousands and thousands of satellites. And what kind of service they are building on top of those new massive satellite networks. So what I can kind of foresee is that the cellular network operators and those satellite service operators and service providers need to start collaborating and finding ways of really bringing these services to the end customers. So that's kind of what we are seeing that the investments are going into. There is also this kind of low-level technological development that what kind of satellite receivers should be in place for the mobile phones and what kind of satellite gateways and routers should be in place inside of the cellular networks to access those satellite constellations and satellite networks. So we can already see that that effort and that investment has already started. So I would say that it hasn't been ongoing for too long time, but it's, let's say, within the last 12 months, we have really started to see effort in that technological development.
Yeah, I just read also that the new iPhone 13 will have satellite connectivity. Is that a big deal in your opinion? And will the rollout of satellite capabilities come in waves and build as we get closer to Release 17?
Yes, and I think it will be bigger than most of the companies even expect and anticipate. I have been discussing with some traditional satellite service vendors, and traditionally the satellite service has been its own corner of the wireless communications industry. And satellite service has been always like a special service, specially built for certain type of applications for government, some kind of surveillance, for example, and this kind of robust communications, and then some services like the Iridium phone. We have seen that the number of subscribers have been reasonably low, and also the running costs have been very, very high. And I also have noticed that the business hasn't been able to grow in the satellite side with the traditional type of satellite service, as well as the return of investments have been not very, very high level. But now when we look at the 5G NTN, suddenly there is a standard that says cellular communications should expand on using the satellite links. And what that really means is the increase of the volume. So this will be the major thing for the satellite industry for, let's say, the timeline of the space communications altogether. At the same time, this also expands the cellular network's possibility for reaching for the subscribers. So there is kind of a win-win scenario. The satellite industry is really boosting up in volumes due to the fact that there will be millions, if not billions, of subscribers who suddenly have access to the satellite. But also, from the cellular point of view, suddenly we can sell a wideband broadband connections to the cellular networks, including also the satellite coverage, for some rural areas where traditionally it would have meant building up and investing millions in the infrastructure. So I really now see that this is kind of the volume of the business that really is getting everybody interested in the topic altogether. But it's kind of both sides will be winning, and this will boost not only the cellular networks, whoever is working on cellular access and coverage, vendors, operators, but also the satellite side. So who is building the satellite service and operating the satellite network. So this is a handshake where everybody wins.
Well, who doesn't like it when everybody wins? But it does sound like there are still some things that could evolve from a business model perspective. I had kind of always assumed when I had heard about non-terrestrial networks that it would be a subscriber continuing with their operator, and that operator would have agreements with the satellite companies and everything to provide this additional service. But it sounds like there are some other possibilities as well.
Yes, yes, definitely this will enhance the existing business, but also brings opportunities for expanding the access and the network kind of connectivity. So I would say that it kind of is boosting the existing, but also bringing a lot of new opportunities onto the reach of everybody who's working on the networks and cellular access.
Okay. Well, fantastic, Yoni. Thank you very much again for joining us on All Things 5G.
Very good.
Before we go any further, I'd like to take just a moment to talk about an important new ebook available from Keysight. As we all know, Open RAN represents a tectonic shift in wireless communications, reshaping future radio access networks to adopt an open, virtualized, and disaggregated architecture. Anyone who looks into O-RAN quickly realizes that it is an alphabet soup of acronyms, new terms, and even old terms being used in completely new ways. It's very complex, and trying to understand it can be overwhelming, even for an industry in which the common vernacular is dense technical jargon. But not to fear. Experts at Keysight have created an ebook to serve as the essential introduction to O-RAN. This book covers it top to bottom, explaining O-RAN in a fundamental way, cutting through the complexity and laying it all out in a very intelligible manner. Whether you are a veteran network engineer, a relatively new network engineer, or not a network engineer at all, this ebook serves as the perfect primer to explain what O-RAN is, why it is emerging, and how it differs from the traditional radio access network. The book also provides some concrete suggestions for what needs to be considered for designing, developing, and implementing O-RAN. Best of all, the essential guide for understanding O-RAN is available, free of charge, to anyone. Simply go to www.keysight.com/find/O-RAN book and download it today. Again, that's www.keysight.com/find/O-RAN book. And you can include the hyphen in O-RAN, but you don't have to. It works either way. So download your copy today. Okay, and we are back. We are joined now by Dr. Pekka Kiosti, a senior specialist in channel emulations with Keysight. Welcome, Pekka, and thank you for joining us on All Things 5G.
Thanks for inviting me.
So as you know, we're talking about non-terrestrial networks, and as an expert in radio channel characterization, can you describe the characteristics of satellite radio channels and maybe talk a little bit about how they differ from terrestrial radio channels?
Yes. So
it's a pretty broad question, I guess.
Yeah, yes, it is. Let's try to keep it short. So I guess many of us are a bit more familiar with terrestrial communications and terrestrial radio channels. So I compare satellite channels to them. So the first evident difference is the long propagation length. So the link distances are much longer, starting from, say, 500-600 kilometers up to 6,000 kilometers of geostationary satellites. And that long propagation distance has certain consequences. Firstly, the path loss, so distance-dependent path loss, is very, very high, and that necessitates high-gain antennas to be used in transceivers. And the other effect is long propagation delay. So we know the speed of light, and that's the speed that the signal is propagating, and we can face extremely long propagation delays, even up to 130 microseconds, which is extremely long time in modern communications. And the other evident difference to terrestrial communications is the speed of radio devices. So especially on low Earth orbit satellites, their velocity is extremely high. They can make one orbit in 90 minutes or so, between 1.5 and 2 hours. So they cause very, very high Doppler frequencies to their communication signal. And that's the other thing, main difference. And then maybe one or two smaller differences. One is because the propagation distance is so long, the angular spread of the signal is is very narrow, and it's basically always plane waves that enter the propagation environment on Earth. So maybe that's the most evident difference to the terrestrial radio channel conditions.
Did you say the difference in length was like 1,000x higher than terrestrial networks, 5 to 6 kilometers versus 5,000 to 6,000?
Yes, it is.
Wow,
and it's even, I mean, in modern terrestrial communications, they are nowadays much shorter. I mean, if we talk about indoor communications and so on.
You explained some of the differences with the terrestrial radio channels. Can you expand on some of these differences a little more, and especially, you know, around atmospheric effect, for example?
Yes, sure. So the previously mentioned effects are more related to the altitude and velocity. But then one more thing is this long propagation distance through the atmosphere. And there are several effects that must be taken into account when we talk about satellite communications. The first one is something that we can observe also by human eye when we look at stars. So you might have noticed that stars, they do twinkle, so the intensity of the light is varying actually very rapidly. And that same phenomenon we can observe also on radio frequency signals, and that's caused by turbulence or wind, we could say, in the troposphere and also in the ionosphere. So the electron density is changing rapidly, like locally, and that is either focusing or spreading the radio signal. And on the ground level, we see is as a phase or intensity variation. So that scintillation, it's one effect. Another one is what we call Faraday rotation, and it's something that affects the polarization. In satellite communications, often they use circular polarization, and one reason for that is the Faraday rotation. So when traveling through the magnetic field of Earth, radio signals, their polarization changes, and it depends on the amount of free electrons and, of course, the length that the signal travels through the magnetic field. And it simply rotates the polarization state of the transmitted signal. And if we use circularly polarized signals, the rotation doesn't cause any harm on the receiver side. So maybe those are the two peculiar effects of the atmospheric attenuation. Or maybe I should mention the third one. It's, of course, a molecular absorption that is present always, also on terrestrial communications. But when we have, again, long propagation distances, that starts taking place. So we have like extra attenuation due to the interactions with water vapor and oxygen molecules in the atmosphere.
I think that's a really great visual representation, the way you described the twinkling of the starlight. So that same phenomenon basically applies to the radio waves and the signal strength is kind of twinkling. Is that the way we can think about it?
Yes, that's what the radio can observe. Also in the case when the satellite transmitter is static and the ground station is static, so we could basically expect time invariant channel conditions, but due to this scintillation effect, it's time variant and the amplitude and phase do change over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It occurs to me that characterizing and dealing with these radio waves is a much more complex undertaking than terrestrial communication. Would you agree with that?
Well, in some sense, yes, but in some sense, no. What I mean is that often, if the satellite has very high altitude, so the elevation angle is small and the ground station is outdoor, so we have only one dominant propagation path. So in that sense, the radio channel is rather simple, even though the physical effects are not.
Mm-hmm.
But then on the other hand, when we have a moving like low Earth orbit satellite, and if our ground station, for example, a mobile phone is moving in some built-up environment in a city or so, so we have the complexity of both paths. So we have the satellite propagation path and all the atmospheric effects, plus we have the terrestrial radio channel. So we have possible interactions from buildings, from trees, ground, etc. So it's a combination of the both, and it's then, of course, more complex than either of these parts alone.
Right. So what are the main challenges in emulating satellite and non-terrestrial network radio channels? I know we've touched on some of them.
Yes. So it is, of course, related to the physical effects and phenomena mentioned earlier. And again, if we compare to terrestrial radio channels and emulation of them, so one thing is this already mentioned extremely long propagation delay. So it is implemented in a fading emulator like PropSim by introducing a fast memory that is first the signal is written in and then it's read out with different speeds depending on the physical changes of the propagation length. But any normal delay elements are not possible. And then another thing is this already mentioned extremely high Doppler frequencies, and they would be difficult to generate the same way what we do normally in terrestrial communications, but they are also emulated by using the same trick as we do with the long propagation delay. So by writing and reading to a fast memory, we can effectively change the propagation distance, and that is seen as Doppler shift of the transmitted signal. So that's the way to do it. And the rest of it is basically the same as in terrestrial communication. So the multipath effects on the terrestrial environment are added on top of the satellite effects by just having this programmable finite impulse response filter bank. And if we have talk about MIMO communications, we have multiple input and multiple output there and multiple FIR filters introducing the terrestrial multipath effects. And basically, that's how it's done.
Fantastic. Dr. Kiosti, thank you very much for being our guest on the All Things 5G podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, and we're back. That was very enlightening.
Absolutely. It feels like Dr. Kiosti gave us a little mini lecture there.
Yeah, it felt like being in his class over there in the university in Finland. But it was really interesting to understand the challenges from all different phenomena that are coming into place with non-terrestrial networks versus terrestrial ones.
Very true. Okay, so time to once again thank our guests, Jani Tolonen and Pekka Kiosti of Keysight, and especially thank you to all of you for listening to the All Things 5G podcast.
Yeah, and don't forget to check out the All Things 5G webpage at keysight.com/find/allthings5G, where you can find more information about non-terrestrial networks, browse the past episodes, and most importantly, subscribe to All Things 5G for alerts, swag, and subscriber-only content.
And keep an eye out for the next episode of All Things 5G. New episodes are posted on the first day of each month on our website and wherever you get your podcasts.
Until then, this is All Things 5G signing off.